Okay, this presentation is, this is a lot of the work of Natalia Salinas, who is defending on Monday. She's a master's student with me, and her defense date is on Monday. But a lot of people have contributed to this work. The breeders were Jim Hancock and Tom Davis. For phenotyping, we used phenotyping data collected in Rosebreed 1 by Meg and Mathai, Liz Mahoney, Kazim, and Sonali. Genotyping, a lot of people were involved in the genotyping and the data analysis, and they're all listed there, and I would like to acknowledge each one of them because they all contributed to this work. So starting with the types of strawberries that are mostly grown, according to photoperiod and temperature interactions, strawberries are classified into the two different groups that are short day plants or June bearers, and they're also referred to as once flowering, and I'm going to go with the once flowering as the term. And then the other group is the day neutral plants, remontant or perpetual flowering plants. For once flowering plants, flower bud initiation happens in the fall, when days are short. Flower bud development happens in the spring, and you end up with one crop in June. That's why they call them also June bearers. For perpetual flowering plants, flower bud initiation again starts in the fall, and then it also continues as long as temperatures are less than 27 degrees and the weather permits. So you have multiple crops of strawberries throughout the growing season. There's been some work, this has been a very interesting a trait of a lot of interest in the strawberry community. And so some work has been done on QTL analysis. Sonali found a QTL on linkage group 4, and it was a QTL based on, it was multiple environments. And so this is the marker that was of interest and tightly linked to this trait in her population tribute by Honeyeye. Also, the INRA group led by Beatrice Denoyer, they identified a locus, the PFRU for perpetual flowering and runnering locus, also on linkage group 4, that controls perpetual flowering in this population, where the perpetual flowering parent is Capitula and the once flowering is CF1116. This group also has been working on developing markers that can predict this trait, and they shared with us information about these four markers that are in green that are linked to this trait in the Capitula by CF1116 population. So the objective of this study was to evaluate these five SSRs for their ability to predict perpetual flowering in over 800 strawberries that were planted and evaluated across multiple environments. So the sources of perpetual flowering in the populations in this germplasm, they included the very commonly used source of Fragaria virginiana subspecies Glauca, the Wasatch clone, that was brought in by Bringhurst and has been used a lot as a source of remontancy or perpetual flowering in the California cultivars such as Capitula, Tribute, and Seascape. And these three were sources of perpetual flowering used in the breeding populations that I'll be talking about. Another source was generated from Pan American, and that's represented by the Fort Laramie parent used in these breeding populations. And we have an unknown source that's represented by Therian, and that's the seed-propagated strawberry cultivar that generates a lot of progeny that is perpetual flowering. So phenotyping was done across these multiple environments. And, okay, I'm going to go back just to explain that. We considered perpetual flowering any of the plants that flowered after July 17th, and once flowering plants, any of the plants where there was no flowering after July 17th. I wanted to mention that we for genotyping for four of the markers, we were able to use this technique developed by Eric Vandeweghe's group. It's called microsatellite allele dose and configuration establishment. What it basically allows you to do is treat octoploid just like a diploid. So if you don't use this technique and you amplify this SSR, for example, in tributes, you end up with these four alleles and you score them as presence-absence markers. But if you use this technique, you end up identifying the allele composition at each of the four subgenomes. You can identify homozygous alleles. So like here, we know that 161 is homozygous in the B subgenome. You also identify null alleles. So it is very, very useful. And you cannot do it for all markers, and it's not very easy, but we attempted to do it as often as we could. So these markers were also very useful for parentage verification. We ended up figuring out that there was an outcrossing rate of about 17% in each of the breeding populations, in both breeding populations, at Michigan State University and in Corvallis, Oregon. And we used the presence of the alleles in the progeny and their absence in the parents as the criterion for identifying these progenies that do not fit the their pedigree. Also, we found that there were multiple genotypes used as parents in these breeding populations. So Fort Laramie, FRA 1701, Tillamook, and Puget Reliance, there are multiple genotypes that were used as parents. We had to take that into account. And that the Fragaria virginiana called FRA 1701 here, that was used as a source of perpetual flowering in both breeding programs, were totally different from each other. So for doing the marker trait association, we found that for all the states except in California, 12 refers to 2012, and Oregon 2013, six common alleles consistently were significantly associated with perpetual flowering. And they resulted in the highest mean differences between once flowering and perpetual flowering parents. So these are the alleles, for example, here 167 at this SSR. At BX89, we had 251 and 262. And these other three SSRs, we have 129, 209, 149. This is an electrophorogram that shows the 209 allele from BX56 as an example. Okay, now, we genotyped, of course, the parents, and that's a very important slide, I think, because it demonstrates that, so the top panel has the once flowering parents that were used, the bottom one has the perpetual flowering parents that were used. So you notice that for all of the alleles amplified by these four SSRs, you have the allele that is associated with perpetual flowering was present also in some of the once flowering parents, not only in the perpetual flowering parents. For example, early glow here had five of the six alleles that are associated with perpetual flowering, and it's a once flowering parent. Some, like MSU56 and Honeyeye, didn't have any of the alleles. EMFVI136 is the one that is farthest from the locus. The 167 allele that is associated with perpetual flowering is only present in the perpetual flowering parents. And I wanted to show you that these are the two different Tillamooks used as parents, so you can see they have different genotypes at these SSRs. Fort Laramie, we refer to as the one from the NCGR, and this one was the genotype of this parent was inferred because we don't have the plant anymore. And then cerium, even though it's seed propagated and it's supposed to be homogeneous, is really not, as you can see from the genotype of two different cerians. The other thing is, so when we use this technique MAT-CE, and we can assign alleles to subgenomes, you notice here that, so here I've underlined the alleles that are associated with this trait. At this locus, EMFBI 136, 167 is specific to one of the subgenomes. While at the other three SSRs, you notice that the allele that is associated with the perpetual flowering trait is present in multiple subgenomes. What does that mean? It means that, say, you have the gene on subgenome A, and that's where you have the 129 allele too, but you also have the 129 allele on the other subgenomes where the gene is not active. So that means when the 129 allele is present, it doesn't always indicate activity or that the gene is there, right? So that's a very important consideration in an octoploid organism. So then we looked at allele association based on where the perpetual flowering trait came from. In this case, in the capitula by CF1116 population. And I wanted to explain. So the navy bars are allele present and you have perpetual flowering. These striped ones are the allele is absent and you have one flowering, basically. And then the dotted ones are the allele is absent and they're perpetual flowering. So when you see, this is the marker trait association, is the combination of these two. So in this population, we confirm that these alleles are associated with perpetual flowering. In the seascape and tribute-derived populations that share the Fragaria virginiana source as the source of the perpetual flowering, we have BX215. The 129 and the 149 and the 167 alleles were highly associated. Now, one important thing here, if you look at these two, you want this to be very small. Basically, when the allele is absent, you don't have perpetual flowering. We think, meaning based on these results, when the alleles are absent, you have a much higher chance of the majority of your progeny being once flowering. Over 90% of the progeny that did not have the allele, basically, is once flowering. So you can use the absence of the allele as a predictor of once flowering. The Fort Laramie NCGR parent, so you have really basically presence in once flowering and in perpetual flowering. And the reason for that is because in these populations, both the once flowering parents and the perpetual flowering parents had these alleles. So they were not segregating in the progeny, and they cannot be used for predicting perpetual flowering. Because the time is getting short, I want to just get to the punchline at the end, which is our recommendation. Cerian derived, the 167 allele and the 262 were equally effective at predicting remontancy. Since BX215 is the closest to the gene, we wanted to do further work analysis to see if we can look at combinations of alleles that can predict perpetual flowering or once flowering. And we found that now the presence of the 129 allele and the absence of the 160 allele, we had a much higher percentage of these, a proportion of these individuals were actually perpetual flowering. The other thing that is important here is that here the presence of the 134 allele and 123 and the presence of the 127 allele in cerian, they were only present in cerian-derived progeny. And so in these populations, it is these alleles that predict perpetual flowering, not the 129 allele. So it's very important to test these markers in different populations. That's what it means to validate the association in different populations. So we confirmed association of this locus with perpetual flowering in germplasm derived from the Wasatch source of perpetual flowering. We, right now at this stage, we think that the absence of the 129 allele for the SSR that is closest to the gene is predictive of once flowering and can be used as a DNA test. More work is needed to identify and validate alleles responsible for perpetual flowering in other sources of perpetual flowering. And we think that it is important to do a haplotyping exercise in this region to identify possibly haplotypes that are more predictive of perpetual flowerings and convert them to a DNA test that is more predictive. And I'd like to thank our funding sources. And do I have any time for questions?